So it's.
I gotta give them the card.
I know. Yeah. Get one when we go to New York.
Awesome. You tell you what, I don't remember what. Right when the logo for like one of the production companies comes up,
mm-hmm.
there's like this music.
Yeah.
And it's like flashing.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, that one.
I tell you what, the guy I took with me lost it and he was laughing for the rest of the movie. Like that broke him. And then
wow, great.
You had a fan for the rest of the movie. It's like right out of the gate before the first person appears on screen. It was incredible. We've been talking about this for quite a while, like this movie, because like I think about a year ago, maybe a little bit less than a year ago, some stuff started to surface out there,
mm-hmm.
like just whether it be like a teaser trailer or some of the artwork you guys were doing,
mm-hmm.
and it's always been kind of like one of those little films on the horizon that everybody's been kind of really excited about. And I don't know if you've kind of seen the grassroots thing kind of building up for it, like
in the
geek community. But
well, it was we originally shot a trailer to get the money for the movie, and so we did one that cost us like $500, and it had incorporated other blaxploitation movies, and we gave it to our financier, John Steingart, to see, and that got the movie made.
Okay.
And that trailer we put online in June June of 2008,
uh-huh.
before we even finished the movie, and then that's when that trailer got picked up by like the internet community.
Yeah.
It started off on like a Japanese website, and then all of a sudden one day in June it just spread. And we're like, wow, we haven't finished the movie yet.
Minor detail.
Yeah. Mm. And it was like, none of that footage was in the movie. So it was really confusing to people because, we shot it on Super 8 and it's like, it looks really old.
Yeah.
The original trailer.
Right. What did you shoot the actual film on?
We shot it on Super 16 color reversal.
Okay. Yeah, because it certainly, the cool thing is like you have all these guys that are trying to replicate older films, like the whole Grindhouse thing, and they were done with big budgets, and it was done with big stars, and it was like, hey, look at me, and your approach, it felt so much more natural, genuine, and like an actual, like there's love that kind of permeates the entire movie, and I kind of wonder is, like, was it just kind of a cool idea that kind of hit you, or was there actually like, had this been something that had been bubbling up for a while, like kind of paying homage, and at the same time, having a little fun at the expense of the filmmaking style of that era.
It was an idea I had a while ago. I mean, it was kind of birthed quite a while ago, where I used to have blaxploitation like parties at my house,
uh-huh.
and somewhere along the line, I thought it'd be really funny to do another one of them, but do it with current folks. But the only way you can do it is to do it, make people feel like they're actually watching an old one,
mm-hmm.
And I mean, I was listening to a James Brown song of Superbad, and that's when I kind of got the idea for the movie. The kind of movies is kind of like had a vision of it. I was like, oh my God, And so then we started the process shortly thereafterwards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow, it's so weird because like you have like a reputation, as the hard ass. You're in movies. You don't really see the funny side, the funny bone mm-hmm. side of you a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that you were in one of the creators of the movie too, I literally had no idea. This is kind of one of those redefining type of experiences because it's a chance to see a completely different side of you. Was it just fun, completely letting loose?
Yeah. Well, the crazy thing is that if you looked at my body of work, you're gonna find there's more comedic stuff than this other stuff, but it's many times in the television stuff I've done, I've been somewhat of comic relief in things like Wonderland, Clubhouse. We worked on a movie earlier, Thick as Thieves. We did that 10 years ago. I'm doing Why Did I Get Married? I mean, actually,
yeah.
Like, it's like, I've been kind of, my friends, it's not strange for them.
Right.
Because I've got stand-up comedian friends who are begging me to get on stage and do stand-up. But I think for the rest of the community, when you do something like playing hard-ass or like some kind of ridiculous creature or something, that kind of resonates
yeah.
pretty deep.
Yeah. Well, I think it's good because, I mean, you're getting to reach new people with each film, you mm-hmm. know, and something like this, it crosses so many different, you know, demographics now in terms of, like, because, mm-hmm. I mean, like, the film, obviously the film geek community has jumped onto it. Mm-hmm. Like, they totally are into it. Mm-hmm. And I think you guys, you had a presence at Comic-Con, did you not?
Yeah,
we did. That's
Film Geek Central.
Yeah, I'm sure you kind of saw some things there that you can't unsee. Well,
yeah, I was a veteran of, Comic-Con being
right.
Spawned.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
So coming back to that, it's like, okay, I remember this stuff. Yeah. Yeah,
I got it. There's one line I gotta ask, the line where he goes, "I threw that shit before I even came in the room."
Mm-hmm.
Where, how did that? That is just, that was like kismet, like perfect, the perfect scene. How did that happen? That moment.
I mean, the funny thing about that line to me is that, you know, Mike wrote that, and it was like, you know, it was just to me, it was just in the script. You know, it was right. like it wasn't the standout breakout line, which it totally has been across the board.
Okay.
But like, I think it just has to do with his delivery, was just
absolutely.
So bananas, you know, and so enthusiastic.
It was so funny. I couldn't believe it.
That line is a bit influenced by a story that Ice-T told me.
Of course.
You know, rapper Ice-T, who's one of the funniest guys you ever want to meet. I mean, that's another guy, he's hilarious. He's got the funniest stories of anybody I ever met in my life, right? And but his persona is so. His persona is so dead serious, you know, with the whole rap thing, you know, gangster thing. He's one of the funniest guys ever.
Well, once I started seeing him in movies, like, I think Ricochet and just like little like obviously New Jack City and all that, but And even if some of his music, I mean, some of his music, where there's always that kind of just sarcastic or tongue-in-cheek teaching that kind of permeates.
Nothing shows nothing he has done has given a glimpse to how funny that guy is in person. It's like he can go up on stage like with no material and crack you up.
Really?
I mean, he's really that funny. He's really funny, and it's hard to believe.
How did you not get him in this?
I don't know. I mean, we had a number of people, you know, waiting to get on, and you know, knowing that he he's on a show and all that stuff, and he's in New York. I don't want to mention that. go down that road, but you know, he's I don't know.
But the thing is, there's a lot of folks in this movie that. Some of them are people you might expect to see in it, and then some completely not.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's that kind of balance of, like, you know, mm-hmm. serious. One of the things I was kind of worrying is, did you ever come to a crossroads when you're making the movie where you're like, oh, crap, that looks too good, or oh, crap, that looks too bad, or this looks too intentionally... I mean, how do you find that balance? Because, like, the scene with the microphone, obviously, mm-hmm. is completely playful and all that, but, you know, some of those movies, what made them so loving, so easy to love and all that was, like, the kind of, like, kitchen sink mentality and the approach they took that was sometimes not really from a place of true filmmaking skill, but of just getting the job done and getting in mm-hmm. front of the camera. I mean, like, how did you find the balance of the tone, keeping it from being, mm-hmm. you know, living in that world?
I think that a lot of it, well, I mean, one of the great things is that our budget was so low that we actually had to think in the same ways that they had to think in those movies on the 20, you know, day schedule. Right. So, I don't know. I mean, a lot of it was just, you know, we'd seen enough of the movies that, like, I mean, a lot of that stuff that's in the, you know, like, I mean, the scene with the boom mic is in, I mean, that happens in Dolomite quite often. Like, yeah, in the fight scene. Yeah. You know, so it was just, mostly for us, it was just trying to make it look like those movies and have the same feel of those movies. Like, this is if something was like a 70s era, then that's okay.
Right.
But if something was kind of like modernish,
right?
And you know, I think, you know, going like 35, 40 years, you know, later, it's very easy for the modern world to slip in, like, and the way somebody speaks, or you know, mm-hmm. oh, there goes an SUV, or there goes this or that. You know, it's just trying to hold out the modern world is becoming increasingly difficult. Yeah. You know, to make mm-hmm. so it was a big challenge for us.
Yeah, and sometimes like with some of the actors or some of the comedians. You had to really keep a close eye because they will do something that's modern, you know what I mean, or have some kind of, like, I had to really kind of protect the speech and everything, you know, how the people spoke back then.
Yeah.
You didn't want any modern slang to slip in,
yeah,
to any kind of improv.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I can imagine there's stuff on the cutting room floor that's insane. I mean, do you have like a gag reel or anything like that that's going to be on the DVD or anything like that?
Yeah, we were just talking about that. Yeah, and yeah, we've got some funny stuff. I mean, we got some really funny things that, you know, I hope we get on a gag reel.
Yeah, no, well, definitely.
It seems like the kind of movie that would be amazing for home. I mean, like the amount of potential as far as, you know, just. I mean, did you ever see Not Quite Hollywood, that documentary about the Australian kind of grindhouse culture? It's just coming to DVD, but it was kind of like a. It hit the circuit a while back. It's a really cool movie, and it's basically, you know, at the same era as the blaxploitation stuff, but it was in Australia. Nobody was paying attention to those guys. There was nobody checking them, so they were doing tits and ass and violence, crazy stuff, but done once again on a shoestring. And there's like a kinship. It's almost like these two things are happening parallel to each other without knowing it, and it just so happens that that's Australian, and, you know, here, and we're here in America doing it this way. It to me, it's like you guys, this movie, the timing of your movie, and that are kind of like a renaissance. I think, like, you know, the kids that are, I mean, like, you're going to reach an entirely new group of people that are going to go back, and obviously now that they can find those movies because DVD allows them to see it, there's almost kind of like a neat, you're almost like a gateway drug to those movies now. It's like it's cool because you did, you didn't cheapen up and have like a music video or like kind of give in to the vibe of taking advantage of CG or anything like that. I can't imagine like the kind of choices and decisions you had to make during that process. It's like, you know, the attention to detail and not losing that demeanor like you were mentioning, where a little bit of slang, because even if a tiny bit creeps in, it cheapens it a little bit.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's why also a lot of people ask, you know, why did we not go the route of getting cameos from people from the 70s? And this for precisely that reason. Because if you got an older person who's, you know, currently that person's in their 70s, and you knew he was supposed to have been younger back then, it destroys the illusion. Like, say, you know, getting Jim Brown to do a cameo.
Right.
We kept calling it cutesy. It's like, yeah, but it's not well thought out. You know, here's a guy, he should very well be young. And we had talked about it one time, getting footage of, you know, like a young Robert De Niro, young, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and splicing it in, like me dealing with that person. See, now that would be, you know, one of those things that we would do.
Yeah.
But we, you know, we can't have 70-year-old, you know, Jim Brown or Fred Williamson pop up.
We were trying to work that in too. Actually, remember there's a Robert De Niro movie called The Swap, where he was. I know it's a movie.
I should know this.
Yeah, it's a movie where like he did a short that he didn't finish, and it was in the public domain. So like the Cannon Group just took it and built a movie around it, right? So you can use that footage. It would have been a little weird, like sure, you know? But it was just like Robert De Niro in the backseat of a car, right? And if that's like the footage that it officially is public domain, so I'm like thinking, okay, so the bad guys are in this car. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you're trying to, you don't want to like veer it too much, because then it doesn't. You know what I mean? You don't, if it was organic,
right?
And didn't pop too hard, like it would be great, you know, but it was a little weird.
But there
weird.
Was definitely a sense of, if something's available, take it. Like back then, you know, it's like, you know, you get what you can, you know.
Yeah.
If you can get extra value out of it, hell yeah.
Yeah.
But it's the young De Niro, right? It's like, it's the young Mean Streets De Niro.
Oh yeah, it's like, it's even before Mean Streets. So it's like, I mean, he's really young in the backseat of a car about to do something, you know, and just would have been like, it would have just, you know, that kind of thing would have just
probably would have been his best performance of the year, too, judging from some of the stuff. But I do have a gripe. The first scene, pretty much right at the beginning, you come out, you're in bed with the three girls, and we don't see any more nudity.
A boob pops out later.
Oh yeah,
in the nurse scene.
Fair enough.
And there's a woman in the pool.
She's not in. That was in the Sundance cut. It's not in the new cut. In the Sundance cut, we had a bare butt coming out of the pool.
Oh, okay. Well, there's a tiny penis.
There is a very tiny penis. That oh my gosh, and we get to see it three times. it's almost like speaking of extra production value. No, I was just, you know, obviously I thought we were in for like a completely, like, you know, romp, you know, with the nudity on that. Because honestly, a little goes a long way now because it's so rare. Different, the mindset. But
well, in the original Red Band trailer we had, we let it all out, you know, so that's, I think that was one of the things that threw people for a loop.
But the cool thing is like, you get that perception. So people see that out of the gate and then you've kind of earned their, you know, like they're just in that world and all that. But was there ever the risk of, like, do you guys ever try to go above and beyond in terms of, like, some of the violence or anything like that? Or do you always kind of have it, like, tonally, like, kind of where it is? Because I assume you had to be, with the shooting schedule of 20 days, it seems like you pretty much had to know exactly what you needed to get by then and didn't have a lot of room for too much improv.
I mean, I think for those, well, I mean, I think you guys pretty much, I mean, you can speak to that, but I mean, it's just like, I mean, they pretty much plan the choreography on the day, right? A lot of it.
Well, some of it, you know, we want to always incorporate where we are, you know, into the choreography. But like, as far as keeping it, toning the violence.
Like keeping it, because like, it's not extreme in those respects. Right. I mean, it doesn't, because you know, judging from the first trailer I saw, I was like, I didn't know where it was going to be, if it was going to be something that was trying to really exploitive, like in terms of like the violence and the kind of, and the nudity and all that. And then when I saw it, it seemed like it really was, it was very sure of itself and it didn't try to kind of go off into those directions. But it seems like a lot of films are shaped in editing and all that. I don't know if you guys had to tone it back or if you guys pretty much had to.
It was, you know, largely it's the script. It's what was, we shot the script. It really didn't have to make any.
Yeah.
So you didn't have like some director's cut that was 2+ hours, 3 hours, or whatever that you had to trim back. It was.
I mean, we had to trim back some stuff because one of the things is that, as far as pacing is concerned, we really learned that now, like you know, even though we're getting that feel of like it's a blaxploitation movie, we could not possibly shoot it in the pace of those movies, which is like I always say, like those movies. Back in the 70s, you know, people brushed their teeth in real time. You know, like if you look at Deer Hunter or something, or a lot of these movies, it's like there's these endless scenes that are going on in real time. We couldn't possibly do that. Our pacing is the only thing that it kind of indicates where we are, you know, as far as bringing in a modern society. You know, it's always something going on. I mean, he can speak to that too.
No, there's a lot of that though. If you watch some of those movies, where the it does kind of like you, it's not the same short attention span kind of world we live in now. It's like they certainly were more deliberate, and the thing is, like, there's those moments that stick out, like you know, like the sensational things kind of carry you, just like in a lot of the horror movies. Like they give you little nibbles, and it tides you over until the bigger set pieces and all that. Yeah, you try to watch some of those movies now, and I think it definitely is a different experience. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that I did, and some of the things like the reusing the footage of the car going off the cliff, and the poor man's process driving stuff.
Right. Yeah.
And there's that one highway shot where it's, I don't know if that, did you actually shoot that where it's like all the old cars, or was it just found footage?
That was from a pilot for. You know, Dean Martin made a movie called Matt Helm.
Okay.
That was for the pilot of Matt Helm that didn't star Dean Martin. I mean, that did we just...
What kind of, like, little discoveries did you guys come across over the process of making the movie in terms of finding stuff like that? And, I mean, like, was it an eye-opening, or was it kind of just like, did you have some advisors who kind of helped steer you in certain directions towards how to pull it off?
Well, that's how we did the original trailer before we even made the movie, is that we incorporated other footage into it. So, you know, Mike would be on one end and somebody be getting shot 30 years ago on the other end, you know? And, you know, it just became one of those things where it just, we were like, okay, well, let's do that process for the film. Right. The movie couldn't have worked otherwise. Like, I mean, we just didn't have the money to have all those explosions and have cars going, vintage cars going in the opposite direction in traffic, you know? Right. And so, yeah,
with the background looking, you know,
1970s, it's impossible. So it's like, it was a weird, weird process because, you know, we had scenes, but even in pre-production, you know, we had to figure out how those scenes were going to happen. So we had two places where we got vintage footage, and one of them was Sony. And this is before we sold it to Sony. So we bought all this stuff. Sony has an amazing, you know, library. Yeah. And it's really set up really well on the internet and everything. And you can just, you know, they helped us, like, find footage. It's like, oh, how about this? You know, and so a lot of things weren't in the script. That they were just, like, the whole thing with the helicopter picking up the car with a magnet. That just was something that, you know, our editor, Adrian Young, found. He's like, oh, look what I found. I was like, okay, well, yeah, there you go. That's in the movie now.
The shot of you in the helicopter. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it was weird because it was happening at the same time. Like, we had a script, but it's like, okay, here's a car chase. Okay, well, here's a car chase that we can get. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, no, a lot of times in a script, you'll see, like, it'll say, like, action scene happens here. You know, they just kind of figure out what, you know. Do you have any examples of, like, a situation where the limitations forced you to be creative and you ended up kind of, it ended up better because of it?
No, I think the entire film was like, yeah, it made you focus on what was important. What, you know, one of the things is, like, even writing the thing, it had to be from the standpoint of, okay, this revolutionary type of writer who's writing the ultimate badass, and his exploits are very transparent, you know. And then from shooting it, we had to kind of shoot it like we're characters from there, mm-hmm. You know, like what and that kind of defined the line that you can. You know, the that you can't go beyond. It's like, what could we possibly let go in our movie? Like, you can foresee, like, say, the boom getting in the picture, right? Mm-hmm. And we could possibly think, like, oh, nobody's going to see that, you know? But, like, that slapstick type of thing or whatever, we wouldn't have it in our movie, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If we're the creators of, right. If we're these 1970s filmmakers, you know, we got, you know, what would our line be, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think we're kind of using an acting approach to it as well, you know, so it's truthful throughout, you know?
Mike's idea from the originally was that he was playing a football player named Ferrante Jones who was playing Black Dynamite. You know what I mean? And yeah. That, I think that, you know, and taking from that, I always thought of my, like, you know, ideas. I was not directing the movie, but directing the movie as a director who's a hippie who smoked too much pot, directing a blaxploitation movie. You know,
yeah.
And so, like, the whole thing is like, okay, then, like, the Nixon's like, he's like, okay, then he fights Nixon, you know,
yeah.
And then the ghost of Abraham Lincoln,
yeah.
Like, he's just like going overboard, you know,
right, exactly.
Like, and then,
yeah. So you see, you know, very transparent the filmmaker's view,
yeah,
those people, so they had to come from a real place for the film to be real, mm-hmm. You know, you're inside the mind of these revolutionary 70s yeah. filmmakers, you know?
Yeah, somebody got the keys to the car that maybe shouldn't have in some respects.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Why don't we have a fight with Richard Nixon?
Yeah, because he's behind everything. And, of course, all presidents learn Kung Fu. You know what I mean? Because that would be in their realm of thinking. Yeah, because in the black community... You always, I mean, as a kid, I always had these uncles and older people from that time period who just believed in all these ridiculous conspiracies. Now, this is what's really going on in the government. And you're just like, well, how do you know, bus driver? You know, my uncle's a bus driver for, you know, a grammar school. And you know, my other uncle is like, he works at a printing place, but they know everything, you know. It's that black paranoia thing. So it's like kind of got to speak to that kind of mindset.
It's I was really the thing. I had a blast with the movie, and the thing that really impressed me the most was that there was, it felt genuine all the way through, and that to me is like, there's so many ways you could have gone wrong, just little tiny ways, and you managed to steer clear of that. I would have liked more breasts, but that's the group of people you have, like you have like Richard Edson, the guy that's like in all those indie movies, and all that. And you've got like Arsenio Hall, and like how the hell did you cobble this together? Was it like you knew all these people from just, you know, it's like, hey, we're doing this movie, and how do you not want to be involved in something like that? Or was it like kind of like, was there almost like a kind of like a really keen sense of like putting the pieces of the puzzle together there?
Yeah, but I knew most of the people, and it's just funny because there's some people who couldn't make it or wasn't quite sure, who are kicking themselves now, that you'd be like really shocked. I mean, I was going out to like people, you know how I wanted to deliver the bullet.
No.
You know that one scene where
the guy
says, look what I found. You know, I was going after Mike Tyson to do that. And now he's like, man, I wish I would have done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's gonna. I mean, like now, he's kind of reached. I mean, like he's. I mean, obviously, The Hangover didn't hurt his.
Yeah.
Ability. And
yeah,
his the documentary, body. Obviously.
Right. Yeah.
That was at Sundance when we were there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was, yeah.
What was that experience like for you guys? Because
it was. Well, we've been there. We were there 10 years ago for Thick as Thieves.
Yeah, I remember that. It was Baldwin and.
Yeah.
There's somebody else.
I mean, Richard Edson, that's where we met.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Andre Brower, Rebecca De Mornay.
Yeah. We covered that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how long we've been doing. That's why I probably should retire. But, because, 10 years on the internet's like, you know, gulag. But
Sundance was, I mean, it's fantastic. It was surreal. I mean, it's hard. Like, people ask me about it. It's just like, the whole thing was so fast and surreal and strange, you know. Like, people are, you know, we get to the theater and people, you know, we had an online presence for a while. And, you know, people are all wearing Black Dynamite t-shirts already. And, like, there's a guy outside with a cardboard sign trying to get tickets. You know what I mean? It was just such a frenzy. And then, like, so we did the screening. We answered some questions. You know, we had a party. It's 4:00 in the morning. And then at 4:50, you know, our producer's like, okay, we're in total negotiations to sell the movie. You know, I go to Mike because we're in the same house. I was like, I think we're sold the movie. And then, like, my mom calls me up, you sold the movie. It's like in the magazine. It's just like,
oh, wow.
You know, you're talking like over a course of like 4 or 5 or 6 hours. And then, you know, you wake up and then you're walking through, you know, the town and, like, there are pictures of, you know, Black Dynamite on both trails, you know, on both trades. And it's just like, like the whole thing was it was a lot to take in.
Yeah,
you know.
But please tell me you had as much fun making it as it looks like you did.
Oh yeah,
we had a ridiculous amount of fun. I mean, I don't think there was a tense day on the set ever.
Yeah, and you shot. I assume you shot at somewhere like the Valley or something like that. I mean, where?
Oh, we shot at Ladera Heights.
Okay.
Or just a lot of old 7-year-old black people who had houses they hadn't changed for 30, 40 years. So
Well, that's the thing. Like, you drive through some areas and it's like scarily a step back in time.
I mean, a lot of it was like, the Honey Bee's brothel literally came from walking through a neighborhood, knocking on the door, and it's like the second we walked in, I was like, oh my God, okay, this is great. And then, you know, and a preacher owned that house, and we were shooting a brothel, and and we shot the pictures of Richard Nixon in the lingerie. So those pictures are going, I mean he's just like, what did I sign up for? Yeah. You know,
well, I think he'll be very proud. Sundance darling. So you don't know much about what the DVD is going to have on it yet, or because
we're still working it out. I mean, because, you know, we never stopped doing viral videos too. Okay. You know, we've been releasing stuff, so hopefully that stuff will be on there. We have cut scenes that we want to do. I mean, we have like a 10-minute cut with the whole Kung Fu Banquet. It's not in.
There's a little bit of a snip of it.
You see snips of it, yeah, right. Yeah. But like that whole scenario, like, is now part of a song in the cleaning up the streets montage.
Right.
That was 10 minutes of stuff, you know.
Oh, see, to me, that's the thing. It's like DVD allows you so much.
Yeah.
So you can reach your audience, you know, on a more, like, personal level,
mm-hmm.
you know, like the commentary tracks and all that, and especially this generation that is completely tied to that. Like, they want to just digest anything, as you can see from the way the people have responded. Just a huge opportunity. I'm sure the studio sees that too. I mean, it's like that's where the money is anyway these days. So, yeah. But as soon as I saw the movie, I was like, I cannot wait for this DVD. This is one of those like Friday night party ones. Yeah, you're crazy.
Here comes a big hook. I was expecting a big hook.